welcome to a quick Conversations of Change podcast with Dr. Jen Fram. We have a change chat with one of the leaders in the change management field. Hello. Today we're here with Lena Ross of Change Hacks, and we're going to be talking about neuroscience. Neuroscience being one of the hot topics in the organisational change world of late. Lena, welcome to Change Chat.
Thank you.
Lena, before we get started on the neuroscience stuff, can you give the listeners a bit of an idea of how you first got into organisational change?
Yeah, sure. So possibly about 14 years ago, I was in the L&D or learning and development space with a strong interest in how the brain learns, strong interest in human behaviour, and a little bit of a background in psych and anthropology as well. And then when I found out about this discipline called change management and a role in change management became available, I thought, wow, these are all the things I love doing.
Yeah.
It was the place where I needed to be with the intersection of all those skills and interest at that time.
Excellent.
So it was really cool.
Lovely, lovely. So we said we're going to talk about neuroscience, and I guess for me, I first became probably more attuned to neuroscience and organisational change about 5 years ago when it started to become more popular. For those who are not familiar with the field at all, can you give us the layman's understanding of what neuroscience is?
So neuroscience would be the study of human behaviour with the scientific slant on it. And recently, because we've had neuroimaging technology like fMRI or functional magnetic resonant imaging, and those sort of things around, we're able to delve a lot more into what the brain is actually thinking when certain things are happening and what emotions are taking place. And neuroscience is able to do what... I really love this quote. There's a neuroscientist called Reed Montague in the States, and he calls it eavesdropping on the brain. And I think neuroscience is the art and science of eavesdropping on the brain, finding out what that response is particular stimuli are put in front of someone, and now it's going into neuromarketing via behaviour, and it's taking a much broader perspective. It's great. Yeah. It's really exciting.
Eavesdropping on the brain.
Yes.
What a phrase. It actually makes me a little bit nervous.
I know. It's the next best thing to mind reading, hey? Just make sure we don't give anyone an FRMI while we're around them.
So tell me, what was your entry point into neuroscience? How did you first
I've got a learning mindset, so I'm always looking out for what's out there, what the current thinking is and what the research is in the field. I always had this thing in my mind that there's a paradox with people who allegedly resist change, and the fact that if we really were hardwired to resist change, we'd still be in the trees somewhere on the savannah. So I was trying to reconcile that in my mind, and it was a paradox that was plaguing me for a long time, especially because I'm so interested in anthropology and psychology. And change often starts with that point of resistance when sometimes it's not always that. So when I discovered neuroscience, I felt that kind of explained everything. It explained the human response, why people respond in certain ways and how we're hardwired to respond, like just going back to our primal behaviour. And then I felt that really unlocked a lot of things for me on how we can deliver change through that lens.
Nice. Now, you've gone on to do a lot of work with neuroscience. And I know when I think I first got across neuroscience was David Rock's paper on the scarf model, and you also had a really great white paper out there which went into neuroscience and the emotional experience of change. Can you tell us a bit, I guess, beyond, well, first of all, what is the theory around neuroscience and change? But then how do you use that on a practical level?
Yeah.
What does that look like in an organisation away from the books?
Yeah, no, look, that's a really good question, because one thing I always like to do as soon as I read something is try and work out how can I make this work or how can I apply this? And there's two ways to look at that is how can you apply it in your personal life, because we are all human and we're hardwired in a certain way. And we also have a professional life and that personal life. So it plays out, I think, in both spheres. If I look at how I've used it practically, the SCARF model I found was a really simple framework to apply, and simple for a couple of reasons. One, it's a really great mnemonic just to remember SCARF,
which
and what
stands
it stands for,
for
status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an easy thing to get your head around, because SCARF says if you feel like you're compromised or you're losing one of those things, you'll go into threat mode. But if you feel like you're gaining one of those hardwired social needs, you'll go into a reward response.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about, you know, is your brain either feeling good about what's happening, or are you feeling in threat mm-hmm. about what's happening? And I thought that was a really neat way to explain it.
Mm.
So with that SCARF model in front of me, I started to think about, okay, so what can I do with change? How many change people know this?
Mm.
And how can we start to put this lens over what we do?
Mm-hmm.
Simple example is when we do a stakeholder assessment, do we even think about whether they're going into threat or reward?
Mm.
Mm. Not everyone's going to have a different response, and sometimes that response is a resistance.
Yep.
Some senior stakeholders, for example, in an org change that may result in bonuses for them, may get a real buzz out of the change.
Yep.
It's going to make them excited, whereas there's people in another part of the organisation that may not feel so excited about it.
Mm.
Going to high threat. So how, you know, can we start to look at that win and gain or reward and loss? So that was one way. But another way... I started to deliver workshops on this at a major organisation and gained a lot of interest, was I put together this little SCARF self-assessment tool that I've done a blog on.
Mm-hmm.
So if we think of SCARF and those five domains of SCARF being, and I'll just go through those again, which is status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness and fairness. I've got five lines on a page, and you can see this on a blog, where you've got one for each of those, and then you've got threat on one side and reward on the other. I would talk to teams about the SCARF model, our primal behaviours and responses, and what that meant in regard to change and new information. And I would get them to plot where they were feeling in response to that particular change that we mm-hmm. were talking about in the organisation. So they were doing a self-assessment, and what became quite clear is how individual those responses were. Some people were feeling very high threat in the status space.
Yep.
And some were feeling threat, say, in the relatedness space. They felt like they were going to lose their tribe or lose the people that they, you know, see every day
mm-hmm.
as a result of the change. And then I would get them to plot it on a flip chart out the front so they could see how the whole team was feeling.
Mm.
And we could see if there were clusters, if you like. So one example that I did with an org change at a large organisation, the interesting cluster that appeared was around relatedness. People didn't want to go reporting to other people. They had a very strong sense of team.
Yeah, right.
So we were able to talk about that. And by talking about that emotion or that response to change, they're also able to label it.
Yeah.
And labelling has that fabulous way of opening up a pathway for conversation and understanding without sounding over emotional, catastrophizing something.
You can't talk about something that you don't understand what it is, you know.
Yeah, so one of the benefits, I think, at an individual level was these people were able to understand their response to change, and then they were able to see how their team were feeling.
Mm.
And then when I said to this particular team, I'll use as an example, I said, so what do you want to do with this? What do you want to do with this now? And they said, well, we'd like to talk about this at all our team meetings moving forward through the change, so we can really unpack that emotion and talk about it and have it as an agenda item. And the team leader felt it was a really good way to just to get the people talking instead of talking at the water cooler
or
you know, behind closed doors. It brought it all out in the open, and I think they felt quite empowered.
And
I've used that approach ever since. So that's just one way, and it's quite a powerful way of doing it, I think.
Mm, mm. I think the thing that I really enjoyed about SCARF when I read it was the simplicity of it.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, I could look at each one of those areas and go, yes, I can tell you what the theory is behind that we've been working on the assumption, but now to have that level of proof around it, and what I took away from the SCARF model was the priority in terms of how important those are above anything else.
Yeah.
I was like, gee whiz, if you only have to remember five things, this is what you remember in change.
Yeah.
And I know that grossly underplays our work, but at a leadership level conversation, you know, that can make a real difference.
Absolutely. And sometimes when you talk to leaders, if it's a new concept that's quite complex and it takes too long to explain, it can disenfranchise them.
Yep.
But if you've got something as simple as SCARF and elegant in its simplicity as well, I think, it's been quite powerful. So after I ran the first couple of SCARF workshops in this organisation, I was getting a bit of demand for some more.
Yep.
So word was getting out that it was a useful tool. And I think one of the most useful things was, look, we couldn't change the outcome. The change was going to happen, but it opened up the conversation, the dialogue, and made people feel comfortable that their response was okay.
Yep.
And I think that was really important.
Yeah, okay, cool. Where can people go for more information on this? Like, you know, if you're wanting to actually school up in neuroscience, do you have to do a grad cert in, neuroscience?
Really good question. Because
what's the opportunities?
I've toyed with that idea myself. And then, look, I think if you can find a way to apply it practically, I think there's a lot of fear out there that people think you need to know a lot about science to actually work through this model and make it work as a change practitioner or as an HR practitioner or a team leader.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need to do that. Mm. I think you just need the open mind to be able to practice it and talk about it. And look, when I run my sessions, I don't go into the parts of the brain or the anatomy of the brain at all.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk to some of that with a psych background, but I choose not to. And I tell them that up front.
Yeah.
I say this isn't going to be a lesson about anatomy or physiology of the brain. I'll talk in simple terms. I'm not a neuroscientist, to be clear.
Yeah.
I don't profess to be, but I think that some of the lessons we can learn from neuroscience are valuable insights into our practice, and I don't think we should overlook them. I think it's something that we can really look to complement all the great things we already do.
Yeah. It was interesting because recently in the Organisational Change Practitioners group on LinkedIn, there was a question came up in one of the discussion threads around neuroscience, which was a challenge to change practitioners of how do you deal with the, I can't think of the wording at the moment, but the what amounted to the skeptics, of neuroscience.
Yeah.
And I've got to say I was a bit stumped on that because I think whilst I've understood there should be some pushback from the hardcore neuroscientists saying, hey, you business people are appropriating our science wrongly.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware beyond that. What would have been, you know, what's your take on that?
Well,
comment?
I think my take on it is probably consistent with what I've already said, and I've seen the skeptics on that, and I think it's, use neuroscience responsibly. Don't go out there and pretend to be the practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
I just say up front in my sessions, when I talk to senior leaders, I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not going to talk about the brain, but what we can talk about is the insights that we can gain from it that can help us understand people, lead people. It helps us understand ourselves and our hardwired responses to change and new information, and this is a really great model, being the SCARF model, a framework that we can use and apply in a really practical setting without pretending that we're scientists with years of experience on it.
Nice. Now, I do have to ask, change hacks.
Oh, yeah.
Where did that come from? What's it about?
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm glad you love it. A lot of people tell me that. I just love the concept of a hack, a workaround. I think something about a hack is a little bit disruptive in a positive way without being too naughty, but does break down barriers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a little bit of a culture hack.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now with, where change is going and change is, change itself is changing, and we've got all these insights coming into the field through agile practices, through neuroscience, just through so many different directions, anything we can find that can really shortcut longer processes or unnecessary processes is a hack. And then I must have just woken up one morning and thought, that's a change hack. I think I'm going to do a change hack today. I think I'm going to call it change hacks.
Yeah.
And it just came.
Because I really enjoyed it because I think, you know, what I know you for is definitely that agile mindset, the willingness to explore new ideas, and it was just the most perfect name that I could imagine for your business.
Oh, good. You think it suits my persona?
Absolutely. Oh, it's totally aligned to Bland. Now, I think the other thing, and so for the listeners, I'll put all these links into the show notes on this in terms of what Lena has referenced. Lena, you've also more recently started blogging in the change space. Yeah. They are fantastic blog posts to read.
Thank you.
How's that experience been for you?
I think it's a great experience. Blogging becomes a discipline, and once you put yourself out there as a blogger, I love writing and researching anyway. I always have, and now having social media as a forum to express that side of me has been really exciting. Blogging is also good because if I if I put my pressure on myself to come up with something new or interesting,
yeah.
it means I've got to go out and look for something new or interesting. So I've got to develop something called searchlighting or explore intelligence
yeah.
or mindset
yeah.
to find that. And that's, you know when you like doing something that comes
yeah.
relatively easily or you enjoy yeah. doing it, really get in the flow when mm-hmm. I write a blog. And the only discipline I think I really have to apply is not putting all my blogs out there at the same time, the art of curation and timing. So that's been a learning for me.
Yeah.
But I always carry a notepad. I like to write my blogs,
yeah.
my ideas down. So yeah, I'm really enjoying that.
And so what's captivating your mind at the moment around the world of change?
Yeah, apart from neuroscience, I'm really enjoying reading the stuff and developing the stuff around all the buzz around agile, what mm-hmm. it is, and the role of a change practitioner in an agile environment, and how it doesn't have to be, the project doesn't have to be declared agile for you to be agile.
In fact, yep.
it's probably just very good change manager. But that's another
podcast. A whole other
yeah,
change.
Yeah, let's not start that one. Really enjoy like exploring the neuroscience side of, how people assume it's resistance. Change plans are often around that starting point of resistance, and that's one of my more recent blogs. And I know you've done some really good work in blogging in that space as well. And I've just remembered a question that you asked me earlier that I didn't answer. It was,
what was my question?
What do I recommend people read? I recommend probably David Rock's work. Some of that is really easy to read, especially in the form of, if you go to the Neuroleadership Institute website, you've written some good stuff on it. So I would go to Conversations of Change. if I say so myself, I have white
you
papers
have,
on
You
it,
have got great papers,
which,
yeah. We'll add those
which
to the blog post.
Yeah. But I think if you just if you Google the SCARF model and just see what's out there, you get some really good spins on what practitioners like us are doing with it as well, I think. So if you just use that real beginner's mindset and just go out and look for stuff on SCARF and just keep digging away, you'll find something that you think, hey, I can do something with this. Use it.
And I think the exciting opportunity there is for people to create their own hack on what they do with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I know you would welcome them having that conversation with you about what they do.
I'd love to hear about that.
And I'd love to hear about it. We can actually share more of what the practical implications are.
Yeah.
Of how you use neuroscience. You know, I think for me, just thinking about that intersection between emotional and rational thought was really powerful too, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think I said this in the post, you know, the notion of using more mindfulness and meditation interventions in change, which sounds really wacky, but permits a whole different way of thinking about change. So, you know, there's lots of good stuff out there. To happen.
Yeah, and I think because it's got the word science in it, it gives that permission for people to talk about emotions, which was once perhaps a warm and fuzzy
That's
soft thing.
Such a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it legitimizes emotions.
Yeah, yeah. And we're allowed to have them because we're human.
And goodness sake, you know, that would be so traumatic. We have emotions, indeed. Lena, this has been an absolute joy. Where can people reach you if they want to continue the chat around
the website? Okay, sure. You can find me on LinkedIn and connect up. Happy for that. And also my website is easy. It's www.lenaross.com.au.
Lovely. Lena, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this Change Chat, then do share with your colleagues and friends. You can find more at conversationsofchange.com.au, at Jen Fram on Twitter, or Conversations of Change on the Facebook.